Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Rama Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada. Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaur, Haribo, 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 Nitai Gaur. Srila Prabhupada ki, Rantara Shrimad Bhagavatam ki. Narayanam namaskritya Narom chaiva narottamam Devim saraswatim vyasam Tato jayam udhirayet Nasta prayesu badrishu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati uttamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtaki. By regular attendance in the Srimad Bhagavatam class and by rendering of service unto the pure devotees, all that is troublesome in the heart is almost completely destroyed, and transcendental loving service under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, becomes established as an irrevocable fact. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So I've been tricked by Nityananda Pran Prabhu into sitting on the Vyasa Sun in front of you all. So please forgive me any mistakes that I make, any shortcomings I have. I was very eager when I heard so many senior devotees were here that it would be a Bhagavatam class from one of them, but somehow I'm sitting here, so please give me your blessings that I'm able to speak something which is in line with our parampara and enlivening for our devotional life. We're reading today from 7th Canto, Chapter 15, which is entitled Instructions for Civilized Human Beings. And text 50-51, it's a combined text. You all have the first part here, so we'll also chant the second part. Dravya Shukshma Vipakash Cha. Dravya Shukshma Vipakash Cha. Dhumo Ratrir Apakshyaha, Apakshayaha, Dhumo Ratrir Apakshayaha, Ayanam Dakshinam somo. Ayanam dakshinam somo. Darsha osadhi virudha. Darsha osadhi virudha. Hanam. It's the second text here. Reta iti kshmesha. Anam reta iti kshmesha. Pitur yanam punar bhavaha. Pitur yanam punar bhavaha. Ekaikashyenanupurvam. Bhutva bhutveha jayate. Dravya shukshma vipakascha. Dhumo ratrira pakshayaha. Ayanam dakshinam somo. Darsha oshadi virudaha. Anam reta iti kshmesha. Pitur yanam punar bhavaha. Ekaikashyena nupurvam. Bhutva bhutveha jayate. Would anyone like to chant? Dravya shukshma vipakascha. Dhumo ratvira pakshaya. Ayanam dakshinam somo. Darsha oshadi virudha. Dravya shukshma vipakascha. Dhumo ratvir apakshayaha. Ayanam dakshinam somo. Darsha oshadi virudaha. Dravya shukshma vipakascha. Dhumo ratira pakshayaha. Ayanam dakshinam somo. Darsha oshadi virudaha. Dravya shukshma vipakascha. Dhumo ratvira pakshaya. Ayanam dakshinam somo. Oshadi virudaha. I'll chant the text 51 once more. Anam reta itikshmesha. Pitir yanam punarabhavaha. Ekaikashyena nupurvam. Bhutva bhutveha jayate. Dravya shukshma vipaka. The paraphernalia offered as oblations in the fire, such as food grains mixed with ghee, cha, and dhumaha, turned to smoke, or the demigod in charge of smoke, ratri, the demigod in charge of night, apakshayaha, in the dark fortnight of the moon, Ayanam, the demigod in charge of the passing of the sun. Dakshinam, in the southern zone. Somaha, the moon. Darsha, returning. Oshadhi, plant life on the surface of the earth. Virudha, vegetation in general. The birth of lamentation. Anam, food grains. Retaha, semen. Iti, in this way. Shma Isha, O King Yudhisthira, Lord of the earth. Pityanam, the way of taking birth from the father's semen. Punabhava, again and again. Eka Ekashyena, one after another. Anupurvam, successively, according to the gradation. Bhutva, taking birth. Bhutva, again taking birth. Iha, in this material world. Jayate, one exists in the materialistic way of life. That's not our familiar translation of Jayate, is it? Translation. My dear King Yudhisthira, when oblations of ghee and food grains like barley and sesame are offered in sacrifice, they turn into celestial smoke, which carries one to successively higher planetary systems, like the kingdoms of Dhuma, Ratri, Krishnapaksha, Dakshinam, and ultimately the moon. Then, however, the performers of sacrifice descend again to earth to become herbs, creepers, vegetables, and food grains. These are eaten by different living entities and turned into semen, which is injected into female bodies. Thus, one takes birth again and again, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. Purport. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 21. Tetam bhuktva svarga lokam vishalam shene punye martya lokam vishanti evam trai dharma manu prapana gatangatam kama kama lavante. When those who follow the pravritti marg have enjoyed heavenly sense pleasure, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, through the Vedic principles, they achieve only flickering happiness. Following the pravritti marg, the living entity who desires to be promoted to the higher planetary systems performs sacrifices regularly, and how he goes up and comes down again is described here in Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as in Bhagavad Gita. It is also said, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. The Vedas, especially three Vedas, namely Sama, Yajur, and Rig Veda, vividly describe this process of ascending to the higher planets and returning. But Krishna advises Arjuna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nistrigunyo Bhava Arjuna. One has to transcend these three modes of material nature, and then one will be released from the cycle of birth and death. Otherwise, although one may be promoted to a higher planetary system, such as Chandraloka, one must again come down, Shene Punye Martya Lokam Vishanti. After one's enjoyment, due to pious activities, is finished, one must return to this planet in rainfall and first take birth as a plant or creeper, which is eaten by various animals, including human beings, and turned into semen. The semen is injected into the female body, and thus the living entity takes birth. Those who return to earth in this way take birth especially in higher families, like those of brahmanas. It may be remarked in this connection that even the modern so-called scientists who are going to the moon are not able to stay there, but are returning to their laboratories. Therefore, whether one goes to the moon by modern mechanical arrangements or by performing pious activities, one must return to earth. That is clearly stated in this verse and explained in Bhagavad Gita. If one goes to the higher planetary systems, Yanti Deva, Vrata Devan, one's place there is not secure. One must return to Martya Lok. Abham Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartino Arjuna. Aside from the moon, even if one goes to Brahmaloka, one must return. Yam Prapya Nivartante Tadhama Paramam Mama. But if one goes back home, back to Godhead, he need not return to this material world. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhya Sta Kripa Sindhubhya Vacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Nama Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Once more, I'll read the translation by Srila Prabhupada. My dear King Yudhisthira, when oblations of ghee and food grains like barley and sesame are offered in sacrifice, they turn into celestial smoke, which carries one to successively higher planetary systems, like the kingdoms of Dhuma, Ratri, Krishnapaksha, Dakshinam, and ultimately the moon. Then, however, the performers of sacrifice descend again to earth to become herbs, creepers, vegetables, and food grains. These are eaten by different living entities and turned to semen, which is injected into female bodies. Thus, one takes birth again and again. Acha, please forgive me. Translation, text 48-49. The ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices known as Agnihotra Yagya, Darsha Yagya, Purnamasha Yagya, Chaturmasya Yagya, Pashu Yagya, and Soma Yagya are all symptomized by the killing of animals and the burning of many valuables, especially food grains, all for the fulfillment of material desires and the creation of anxiety. Performing such sacrifices, worshipping Vaishvadev, and performing the ceremony of Baliharna, which all supposedly constitute the goal of life, as well as constructing temples for demigods, building resting houses and gardens, digging wells for the distribution of water, establishing booths for the distribution of food, and performing activities for public welfare. These are all symptomized by attachment to material desires. Having just left Sri Vrindavan Dham and now hearing about how you also have to leave the moon, I'm feeling like I got kicked out of also the higher planetary system, the highest planetary system. And yet Prabhupada has mercifully landed me back here, which because the deities are here and because the devotees are here, it's also the Dham. So this is the fortune when a person develops Krishna consciousness, is that Krishna is everywhere. And so the experience that you have of being with him is not limited to where you are or even who you're with. It's only limited by our own ability to want Krishna, to access him, to seek him. However, the experience of the moon, Chandraloka, the heavenly planets, that's severely limited by a range of things which are all described very elaborately in the Vedas. Almost the entirety of the Veda, which Prabhupada mentions here, the three Vedas, primarily the Samar Yuja and Rig Veda, they're almost completely and entirely devoted to explaining the process of elevating ourselves through the different planetary systems. And I've seen one copy of the Rig Veda, which it looked like this. Has anyone seen the Veda, these three Veda in their entirety in print? Can anybody give us? Huh. Oh, they're on Kindle. So they'll only take up that much room then. One devotee told me, he's a South Indian born, he told me the Veda would fill up the room we were speaking in, and he said the Veda would fill up this room. But if it's on Kindle, it would only fit in my pocket. So that's one boon of the modern world. But as I heard one devotee say, now anyone can have the Veda in their pocket, but nobody wants to read it. Back then, everyone wanted to read the Veda. Back in previous yugas, everyone wanted to read the Veda, but no one could, because you had to be of a certain qualification, of a certain elevation. Now our only qualification is our desire, but still we have Veda base there in the pocket. All Prabhupada's books, all Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, still we spend most of the time checking weather or the stock app. Or I was happy to see that the Chicago Temple has, on the Wi-Fi, different websites are blocked. I was trying to check the Detroit Tigers schedule to see when we could do Harinams for the baseball games, but I couldn't get onto the website because it was not approved by Kishore Kishori. So I was happy to see that. That's a good bit of discretion. And the discretion that one develops determines the experience that one is going to be allowed to have in the future. And this is very familiar to all of us, even anyone that doesn't yet have an understanding of spiritual existence. If they've spent any time in this world endeavoring for something, then they understand this principle. And when a lot of the trying to spread Krishna consciousness that I do there in Michigan, it's with college students. So when I try to explain this principle to them, I just use the example of themselves being present in university. We go to the University of Michigan. It's a very big campus, very popular. People from all over the planet try to go to the University of Michigan because it's a very accredited school. And so I asked them, how many of the students that you were going to school with in high school wanted to go to the University of Michigan also? And of course, what's their answer? Practically everyone. Everyone wanted to go to the University of Michigan. The football games are cool. The campus is beautiful. If you have that degree, then you're practically guaranteed a job. So, of course, everybody wants to go to the University of Michigan. How many people want to go to the heavenly planets or to, even if we offer them, we explain the spiritual world, you never have to die. You never have to get old. You're never going to be hungry ever again. You're never going to be cold or hot or tired ever again. You're never going to feel in want of money. You're never going to feel embarrassed by others or inadequate. Sounds like a pretty good deal. So everyone, after hearing an explanation like that, they're going to want to go, just like everyone wants to go to the University of Michigan. But why have you been given entrance into the University of Michigan while some of your friends are still in that same small town where you all went to high school, just working at a local restaurant, or working at the gas station, or maybe just living back home with mom and dad, and depending on them? What happened? You wanted to go, they wanted to go, right? So the difference was discretion, which is another way of understanding intelligence. Practical, we use the words mind and intelligence often, and we speak about them. Sometimes, in my experience, the practical reality of what it means to use our intelligence, we don't understand what is the operative principle. So one of the operative principles of intelligence is discretion. So when you meet someone who's gone to the University of Michigan on a full scholarship and received their degree in law or as a doctor or gotten their MBA, one common phrase to describe them is that he's very intelligent. Because that was the operative principle that put him in that, or her, in that place of achievement. Everybody wants to become a doctor and make a lot of money and go to the University of Michigan, but only the person that uses their discretion is able to get there. So on Friday night, when there's a party to go to, rather than following their friends to the party, they went to the library. Rather than sleeping in the next day, they woke up early. Rather than skipping out on class to go hang out at the bar, they were going to the office hours with the professor. And because they used their discretion in that way, then at the end, when it came time to receive the result, they were the ones that gained entrance into the University of Michigan and everybody else, or graduated, for instance. Also, many people go to the University of Michigan and don't graduate because they lose sight of that discretion. They get distracted by lower things. So we can, if we read this, these two translations, The ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices known as Agnihotra, etc., etc., all for the fulfillment of material desires and creation of anxiety, performing such sacrifices, worshipping Vaishnava, and performing ceremony, which are all supposedly constitute the goal of life, as well as constructing temples for demigods. So there's a tone which is being used by Narad Muni here, which is a little, you could say, sardonic. It's a little sarcastic. Supposedly, these things are the goal of life. So supposedly, going to U of M and getting a lot of money is the goal of life. Supposedly, going to Chandraloka is the goal of life. Chandraloka is the moon planet. Prabhupada says the moon planet is a heavenly planet. He's citing the Veda, of course, when he says that. You live for thousands and thousands and thousands and hundreds and thousands of our earth years. You get a body which never becomes diseased, is able to enjoy sex life almost unlimitedly, is able to experience sensual pleasure. In terms of, I'm told, foods and things you drink, things you smell. On the heavenly planets, it's not even done directly with gross senses so much as it's an immersive experience of the intelligence. It's something, it's way beyond what we think of. Like we taste the sweetest galabjaman. It would taste like, comparatively, it would be like eating dirt compared to the experience of sweetness that's had on the heavenly, on our planet. We just, the galabjaman touches our tongue and our tongue feels some sensation and a little tingling happens in the brain and that's it. But on the heavenly planets, each sensual experience is an immersive one. Your whole sense of self becomes absorbed in that thing which you're enjoying. So it sounds like a great place to go and somewhere we'd want to stay. However, we're not allowed to stay there forever. Still on the heavenly planets, there comes a time, everyone is wearing a garland on the heavenly planets. And at some point, several thousands of years after they've entered that heavenly planet, at some point that person's garland falls off. And then everyone starts looking at them like kind of the embarrassed way that people here in America put the elderly people in our society into nursing homes and retirement homes when they become an invalid age, because we're embarrassed by their presence. We don't want to face their mortality. We don't want to face our own mortality. So we put them away and we visit them once a month, once every 2 months until they, once every holiday or once every birthday, until they leave their body and we don't have to face that embarrassment anymore. So that's how the folks in the heavenly planets have to experience life just at the very end when their garland falls off. Because when that garland falls off, that's an indication that they're going to come down back to Earth or whichever planet it was they came from. So access into the heavenly planets is enjoyable but not permanent. And we may not have experienced a heavenly planet in this lifetime, but it's been my experience that many devotees have experienced some level of material pleasure in this lifetime. And then that material pleasure was severed. Familiar, Prabhu? That material pleasure ended. It may not have been as intense and as enjoyable and as laudable as the pleasure that's being experienced in the heavenly planets. But we got some sense that, okay, I'm going to make it. I'm going to achieve. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be settled. I'm going to be peaceful. I'm going to be fulfilled. We had some sense of that. Am I speaking something which sounds familiar to most devotees? Okay. And then at some point it ended. At some point it stopped. And we may have struggled for a little while, some brief period, to try and maintain it, to try and keep it, to try and readjust, to utilize our intelligence, to figure out what is the circumstance which I have to correct in order to maintain my situation, in order to increase my situation, in order to defend, protect my situation. But after some time, because we're all sitting here, then I can understand we just gave that up. We realized that's a fruitless endeavor. It's not going to work. we finally learn that lesson, which is the lesson that Krishna is trying to teach everyone by this fundamental principle of the material energy, which is that it's temporary. He's trying to teach them that we, he's trying to teach us that we cannot enjoy independently of him. That's not possible. Now, someone might say, well, I was enjoying, and Krishna wasn't there, so I can enjoy independently of him. And this is why in proper instruction, proper guidance is needed. We have to correct what people understand the word enjoyment to be, what people understand the word happiness to be. Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Prabhupada's very dear godbrother, he said, you do not know your own value. You do not know your own value. And therefore, we don't know the value of words we use, like happiness and enjoyment. Enjoyment, Prabhupada says, means forever. The living entity's sustenance of existence is to coordinate his activities with his eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada says in the famous purport to chapter 2, text 6 of the first canto, that famous verse, Savaipum Samparo Dharmo Yato Bhaktir Adokshaje. Bhaktir Adokshaje, service to Krishna, that's what will give supracidity, supreme happiness. Nothing more, nothing less. Ahoitaki apratiyata, unmotivated, uninterrupted Bhaktir Adokshaje, service to Adokshaje, the transcendent supreme. So we have to change our perception, our usage, our connotation, our understanding of words like happiness and enjoyment. We have to bring them up to the spiritual standard, and then we'll want the spiritual standard. And that's why the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam is so important, and the hearing of the holy name, Shravanam, then Kirtanam. Kirtanam, we only chant about what we desire. If you meet a young child, in about 3 seconds, you'll understand what that child has been exposed to within the last few days, last few weeks, last few months. They're very transparent. There's some particular toy, or there's some particular character, or there's some particular activity which they've caught onto, and they really want it, and their whole life is about that thing right now. They'll be wearing Spider-Man shoes and a Spider-Man book bag and a Spider-Man hat and a Spider-Man t-shirt and a Spider-Man bedspread, or firemen, or airplanes, or... So also, we put on our corporate logos, and we put on our university logos, and we put on our family insignias, and we wear those things just like a child wears their fascination. So as adults, we grow our fascinations. But when we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, we gradually let those things go. We understand, we realize their petty position. And we seek out Adokshaje. We seek out something which transcends those things, something which is forever. So that's why Narad Muni here is using that sardonic language. This so-called goal of life, the pravritti marg. But actually, what is the goal of life? To follow the nivritti marg, to give those things up and to reestablish our connection with Krishna via the Sankirtan Yagya, especially in this age of Kali Yuga. That will be the sign of one's intelligence. Sumedasaha, good brain substance, is demonstrated when we're doing Sankirtan. But to demonstrate good brain substance is to realize that we don't have very good brain substance. That's what it means in Kali Yuga. Why this Sankirtan Yagya? Why not follow this very elaborate process given in the Veda? Because I don't actually have good brain substance. I don't have enough intelligence to every single day in and day out understand the minute details of discernment needed to traverse this path given by Veda Vyas. Very, very complicated. It's bona fide. It's real. It will work if you follow it. But I don't have the focus. Have you ever been given directions by someone? You don't even try to remember it. forgetting it. After the third turn, you stop listening. You stop listening, isn't it? I'll just look on my phone. That's what you start telling yourself in your head. This is two turns more complicated than I expected. You just stop listening. You're saying, okay, now Prabhu, now you're coming up and you'll see a McDonald's, you'll turn right. Once you made a left out of the driveway, you stop listening. because our intelligence is so weak. In the age of Kali Yuga, it's so difficult to focus on anything. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya has made it very simple. His devotees have shown such an unprecedented example of the opportunity available if we just surrender to the holy name. Unfortunately, we do have just enough intelligence to doubt that such a simple thing could be possible. We have just enough intelligence that it can trip us up. And we can think, well, there has to be something else. I remember there was a young woman in New York City named Jeanette. She was a Chinese lady. And she came and sat down next to me one day out there on the Harinam. And she looks like she's 13, but she's actually about 45 or so. She was an older lady, but she looks 13, just a very girlish figure. And she slumped down next to me, put her hands up like this. And she said, I want happiness. Usually you have to like spend some time with somebody, really, really churn the relationship before they'll start to admit that, you know, my plan for happiness in this world is not working out. But Jeanette just was very transparent all the time. I want happiness. I said, well, you're in the right place. What are you doing in God's name? This is about God? Yes, this is about God. I am God's servant, she said to me. Wow. Well, that's what we're trying to be. She said, you are also trying to be God's servant? I said, yes, we are. She said, I want to serve God in the most intimate way. She actually used that word. Prabhupada says the service relationship in that same purport, 126, he says it's the most congenial form of intimacy. And this is understood gradually by the person who progressively practices Krishna consciousness. So here this Krishna had sat this girl next to me who had already understood the philosophy. She just hadn't been connected to the holy name yet. So I said, Jeanette, if you just stay here and sing and dance with us every day, you will feel that you have become an intimate servant of God. She said, that's it? I said, that's it. That's all? That's all. So every day for the next 7 months, Jeanette came to Harinam. She chanted, she danced. When it was Kartik, the devotees had a booth with a little altar of Damodar, and they would offer candles to the New Yorkers walking by in the park to offer to Lord Damodar. So Jeanette was the candlewala. And she didn't request, she forced everyone she stopped to take a candle. And because she had that certain body, such an odd and endearing form, no matter who she stopped, big, you know, tall, burly men or prissy little Manhattanite women walking by, everyone was forced by Jeanette to offer a candle to Damodar. She would just drag, come on, come on. She would just drag their hand. None of us could ever dream of doing, you know, Sankirtan like Jeanette does Sankirtan. But she took advantage of her physical situation. She made the most of her bad bargain being in this material world to serve Krishna in this fantastic way. So this was Jeanette's consciousness. She was actually very much faithful and absorbed in the holy name. However, once in a while, her doubting mind would get the best of her. And any time there was a Swami that came, she would take the opportunity to transgress all etiquettes, which she never understood nor cared for anyway, and go directly up to the Swami, no matter who they were talking to and what they were doing otherwise, and walk directly up to them and say, I want to know the secret. She would demand that the Swami tell her what the real process was for attaining the highest level of service, because she had a doubt that we would, on the very first day, the very first time meeting her, tell her the highest truth, the highest process, give her the highest principle for knowing herself. She had a doubt that we would do that on the very first day. So she would always take the time to approach. She approached Advaita Maharaj, Naranjana Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj. She would cut through it. As you've seen, all those devotees, when they're present in a temple, there's a throng of people around them, and everyone's waiting their turn, just hoping to get a moment with them. Jeanette just cuts right through the whole crowd, straight up to them, and demands, "I want to know the truth. Tell me the truth. Tell me the secret." And Advaita Maharaj, he understood her heart. He just laughed very heartily. He said, we told it to you on the first day. He didn't have to hear her story. He understood what her anxiety was. We told it to you on the first day. It's all there in the holy name. Come on. No, it's really all there in the holy name. So we all have that in the back of our mind if we're not chanting on the Shudanam platform yet. That means we have some doubt. And because we have that doubt, we're maintaining the offenses. The offenses are doubts. I doubt the power of the holy name, so I think we should vote for Bernie Sanders. I doubt the power of the holy name, so I need to enjoy in this sinful activity to get some pleasure. I thought of all the 10 offenses, I said, okay, at least I don't think Shiva and Brahma matter that much. At least number 2, I'm safe from. But this election cycle has shown me that as a Westerner, we're prone to even lower levels of leadership distracting us from worshiping the Supreme. Prabhupada says that in chapter 4, text 12 purport. He says that the demigods, but also the administrative leaders of the government in this world, men become distracted by them, and we basically brown nose them for our own purposes. So if we don't have this faith that the holy name is enough, then that means we're maintaining offenses. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur encourages us to be introspective. I think I'll end on this point. I've gotten a lot of, you could say, clarity about my own position by going through those 10 offenses and noting how I'm committing every one of them. How each one of those offenses has a place in my life, some more, some less. But I'm getting a lot of clarity by doing that. So it's something, if you feel yourself also struggling with some offenses, a doctor needs a full diagnosis first before the medicine can be properly prescribed. So maybe you'll also find some enlivenment in doing that. Please forgive me for my offenses and anything I may have spoken incorrectly. Please don't take it as a reflection on Srila Prabhupada or the Srimad Bhagavatam, both of whom are perfect personalities. Are there any comments from the devotees? For Lakshmi Moni?
Actually, when I heard the purport, I don't have it in front of me now, but when there was a comment, actually in the verse, that you get material welfare and anxiety. I thought that was beautiful, because we're looking for happiness free from anxiety. And Narada kind of equates the two endeavors, looking for happiness and anxiety, as if we were actually looking for that. Mm. We're definitely going to find it. Actually, I heard, I think Radhanath Swami said that as soon as you start to look for happiness, then immediately your ability to have happiness disappears. Mm. So, the quest in itself is a cause for anxiety. The quest in itself indicates that you don't have it, or that you're afraid you're going to lose it. And so there's a constant fear. That's what happens when the garland starts to wilt, is immediately fear enters. Oh no, my time's up. And then that fear eclipses happiness. So the combination of happiness and anxiety is almost an oxymoron. both together.
Thank you.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for shooting from the hip.
I survived.
Well, so did we. I know, it was really nice. Thank you for doing it. What I appreciated more was definitely the class, but I should say the readiness with which you, I guess, accepted my request. Particularly in this verse, I was something that it caught my attention is the mechanics of living entities roaming around the universe. The mechanics is described here that one may travel to all these planets, but at the end becomes semen and is transferred into I guess the womb. And so it doesn't matter how great a person is and what higher planet they may have reached, at the end they have to become semen, and that's the birth that they have. Any one of us took birth like that. And so it sort of, in a very raw form, I guess for me, it felt like it cut through all that in it and brought it to a very raw form, that it doesn't matter how great you are, doesn't matter which planet you're in, you become a creeper, and then you become semen and take birth again. It was very sobering in that sense. So I appreciated that from the
Jeanette. She took shelter of one of our initiating spiritual masters, and then very soon after that, she disappeared. Yeah, we didn't hear from her. Her son, well, I think she passed away. I think very soon after that, yeah. Her son also didn't know where she was. And it seems like something. Yeah, she moved on. I think she transitioned undoubtedly to a. She had a difficult life and a hard circumstance there in New York City. But I can say with confidence that she's on the fast track back home, because she, every day that she met the devotees after that first day, every day after the first day she met the devotees, she served the Harinam, and that was without fail. And also there was one devotee, you may know Adi Purush Prabhu in New York, so she worked with him, helping him distribution also. She would work with him a few hours, 4 or 5 days a week. So she had a lot of devotional credit her last few days in that birth, and I'm confident whatever birth she had in her next life was one good for Prabhupada and good for her. Thank you, Nityananda Prabhu, about that point. I almost took the class. It was like two different directions in my mind. Well, it's sobering, though. For me, when being in the Dham this last, I like going to the Dham because you get to see what new books are out. And so, you know, you don't see them for like 2-3 years. You hear about them, but you don't see them in America for another 2-3 years. And there's a book out now about Garbhodhan Samskar. And it's in all the bookstalls. It's everywhere. It's like this thick. And as a grihasta, you open that book and it's a very sobering thing to read. How detailed the process, how many places to mess up, how many things can go wrong in this attempt to conceive a child who will be able to and want to follow and practice Krishna consciousness. It's very, very intimidating. And in reading it, I was understanding what Prabhupada meant by saying, if I told you all the rules, you wouldn't make it out of the bathroom. You wouldn't make it. I certainly wouldn't make it out of the bathroom. I wouldn't leave my bed. I'd just stay there shivering. But instead, Prabhupada, you know, all those things to follow are as much as we can, and my realization is we should. At the same time, what was Prabhupada's instruction for that process? The primary one, which all devotees know, is that you should chant 50 rounds before making the attempts. So what is the emphasis, again, on the holy name? On the power of that sound vibration to create all the spiritual atmosphere. No need for the bell ringing and the mantra singing and the different yajnas before and after, and so many grains which we don't even have access to. Proper ghee, which, you know, if you think the ghee that you're buying at the Indian store is proper ghee, then that's a whole nother class. That's why those sacrifices aren't valuable in this age, because it's not a sacrifice to take a piece of plastic, swipe it across a magnetic strip, and then put the ghee in your grocery bag and drive it home. That's not much of a sacrifice. All the while, you're not thinking about Krishna. You're thinking about the traffic. You're thinking about how much the price has gone up. You're thinking about so many other things. But in the previous ages, I was just staying on a farm in Vrindavan with one very nice devotee, Prem Kishore Prabhu. He has cows, and he said just to churn his ghee that he has, that he serves to his Giriraj every day, just to churn that ghee took 8 hours. What to speak of the making of the yogurt, the milking of the cow, the caring of the cow for the entire period when the cow wasn't giving any milk to begin with, the caring of the field so that enough grain could be given to the cow. So much endeavor goes into that little bit of ghee that you get at the end. How many liters of milk was it that goes into 1 kilo of ghee? Something like between 20 and 30 liters of milk for just that much ghee. And we use that much ghee in 1 Rajbhog, right? So you get an idea of why in this age, just on that level, we're not qualified to be performing such sacrifices because they're not purifying to our consciousness to go to Kroger and swipe a piece of plastic. It's not doing much. But when the presence of the holy name is there, then it's truly purifying. When that surrender to the power of the spiritual sound vibration is there, that desire to connect with the Lord through his name, then all the other processes, Jiva Goswami explains, also become auspicious, also become beneficial, also become useful in honing our attention on the holy name. So I think we'll end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granth Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore.